Rhino, we're back. It's been a little bit. I missed you, buddy.
I missed you too, Chad. Yeah, and it is good to be back on the air with you and good to talk some baseball once again. Even though it's not here yet, hopefully us talking about it will maybe push it along a little further and bring it into existence.
And it's an opportunity. It really is, because they're talking again. And we are at a decision point really here in the next week or so. And we're going to get into all of that in the show, but this is the time. If they're going to be able to get into spring training in June and start around July 4th, this is the time. And we've been holding off on coming back to you because we want to make sure we have stuff to talk about. But what we do have to talk about, this is the special Last Dance Part 1 edition, because we said, hey, everybody else was watching 10 episodes of Jordan, and there is a baseball connection.
Yeah, there absolutely is. So we figured, why not bring in the announcer for the Birmingham Barons, Kurt Bloom, is going to join us in part one of a two-part episode. You're going to be able to hear part one of our interview here today. So stay tuned for that. We're going to talk about what the experience was like for Kurt and the Barons in the city of Birmingham, having Michael Jordan play baseball that fateful summer in 1994.
We're also going to be talking about the implications of a shortened season. We're going to talk about longtime friend of the show, Mark Silverman, and his recent battles and some things that you can do to help out, that and so much more.
So stick around because the Friendly Confine starts right now. First inning now, and Chad, it is good to be back with you. It is good to hear your voice again after our hiatus, and we figure why not bring the content back to, even though there may not be baseball right now, we can at least talk baseball and talk about what we've been doing to try and pass the time these past couple of months. How are you doing, and how are you holding up with everything going on around the world as we sit here today?
You know, I'm good. I think, you know, we're all much better than we were back in March and in April. We're adjusting to this, which is kind of the, you know, I hate the term, the new normal. But, you know, we had a reason to have the show this week. We've got a blockbuster guest, which we talked about, and, you know, along with, you know, the linkage to the Last Dance. And, you know, and we want to be good to our listeners. Like, one thing we don't want to do, and if you're a longtime listener to the show, we don't want to, like, every week just rehash and hash and talk about stuff that is unsubstantiated. I mean, sometimes that's fun to talk about, but that's better attuned for local radio, right? So we're here to talk about what we know is happening, and things are either going to happen or not happen. And we're going to find out that in the next couple of weeks. So I am like everybody else. I'm hopeful that things will continue to, or will progress, will be better, that we'll have more clarity on what's going on. But this has been such a hard time, Ryan. I mean, you work in the healthcare field, you go into the office. I've always worked from home. And so, you know, for 162 games of the year, you know, Pat and Ron, if I'm not at the game, they're in my ear, they're over my speakers at home. I mean, that's a soundtrack of more than half of my year. I was supposed to be at opening day, you know, my 18th opening day at Wrigley Field. I was supposed to be at the Padre, all the game of the Padre series, the LA series. I was supposed to fly off in a couple weeks to London for the Cardinal series. So, I mean, I'm missing a lot of trips that are based around being back in Chicago with friends and at Wrigley. So it's disappointing. Just like all of our listeners, you know, this is such a twilight zone year. How are you holding up?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been difficult. As you mentioned, working in healthcare, it's been a very stressful time, but I'm fortunate and thankful to have my job. My wife is still working as well. My family, thankfully, is very healthy, and they're, you know, obviously quarantining themselves too, but you know, we all have stresses that we're dealing with. We all are trying to do the best we can. And it's definitely been an adjustment without sports. It definitely has been tough. I mean, this has always been kind of, you know, the way that we can escape, right? Through sports, whether it's the NBA or the NFL or for the love that we have for Major League Baseball and especially the Chicago Cubs. It brings happiness to us. And not having that right now during this pandemic, I think has certainly taken a toll, but hopefully we can get that back as soon as we possibly can. And so that's a great transition moving to the second inning, Chad. And the Major League Baseball proposal that the owners have initially proposed to the players. I'm not fully up to the, you know, exact details of everything that is going on because it is a little confusing. But basically, there would be an 82-game season. They would start spring training in June. The season would start in July. I love the 82-game idea. Still not sure where these games would be potentially played. Yep. But the owners did offer the players a certain amount of a salary. The players would have to take some sort of pay cut, but the owners have also asked for an additional pay cut. And that's where I feel like the players have balked a little bit. That's not to say that there's not going to be a counter offer or there's not going to be, you know, some other discussions going on. But how do you feel about the prospects of this initial proposal and if the footing can eventually get there for that 82-game season?
You know, what we know, and we've been in this business long enough, we both have been in the media combined more than 20 years. And, you know, some of this is negotiating through the media and getting messaging out there and trying to get certain sides on you and paint the other sides in one way or another. Here's what I can share as a Cubs season ticket holder. The Cubs had a forum and they were very open, very kind of opened up the kimono for us and shared like where their revenue comes from and the impact of some of these proposals. You know, a good portion of the funds they make is the game day experience. A good portion. People always say, well, the TV deals. Yeah, the TV deals are huge, but the TV deals, you know, don't even compare to what the Cubs, for instance, brings in on a day-to-day basis. And so when they look at to say, okay, well, listen, whatever comes into the bucket across the board, we're going to split 50-50. The players so far have balked at that because they will take a monster pay cut. And you could say, well, you're being greedy. I think there's a balance here. There's a balance here of is it worth it to do this, to put them in a different negotiation because they're getting ready to go up against their collective bargaining agreement. You know, they're talking about this could be the year before a lockout or a strike. There's so many things at work. And I always try to appreciate the fact that, you know what, there are billions of dollars at play here. I just want baseball. And so, you know, the proposal they have out there, that was the initial question you asked me. Yeah, they add the universal DH. They've got a 30-man roster. 14 teams are going to make the postseason, that 50-50 split. I feel that if they can find a workable solution, Ryan, that takes into account all of the health concerns, we're going to talk about this in a future inning, and everybody feels comfortable with that, well compensated, and can get the product out there, I think that's what's going to be best for baseball, best for America. I mean, as we record this, the day before Memorial Day, you know, the NFL owners are still expecting full stadiums and a full season. And I don't know how that can happen in this current climate. So if baseball can figure this out and get playing, it's just going to be great for America. I do not think I'm going to be able to set foot. Any fans are going to be able to set foot into Wrigley Field anytime this calendar year.
Yeah, so let us move to the third inning. And that poses the question, Chad, should they play this year in 2020? I mean, there's obviously the one side that says, well, we want them to play. But is it ultimately the right decision for them to play? The NBA is looking to find a way to play their games down at Disney World, and it looks like they may be able to do that with smaller rosters, with maybe quarantining their players in certain areas, and it's indoors in, you know, certain specific gyms. Is it too difficult at this point in time for Major League Baseball to try and get all of these players, their coaches, the trainers, everybody that comes with it to play games, especially, as you said earlier in the second inning, when the income of these teams is so heavily dependent for a lot of them on the attendance and, you know, how many people are coming. Now, it's kind of interesting, if I may say this. The smaller market teams, the ones who don't draw well, so let's talk about the Tampa Bay Rays or the Miami Marlins, they're the ones, believe it or not, that are actually in a better position than a team like the Cubs, who rely so much more, A, with the heavy payroll, and B, with the game day experience. So is it ultimately financially worth it for the owners to play this season and the players to play this season? Is the risk too high at this point, Chad?
This is going to make a lot of people cringe, but Crane Kenny, Tom Ricketts both said, no, there's a point where it just doesn't make financial sense if all of a sudden they're going to be writing $5 million checks every game day just to have a product out on the field and lose that money. Ultimately, this is a business. I'm going to go in a different direction than what you outlined. I'm going to go into this is the thing that has literally kept me in bed thinking about how this could ever happen. Imagine the season starts up, right? Imagine you're going to ask these players the only way to really do this truthfully, safely, because this is a very infectious situation. They've almost got to quarantine into in the most the most closed off cloud of just their world. And I've seen reports that it would take about 20,000 people really to pull a season off. So you're asking, all of these people to be able to stay away from it. So my scenario, the nightmare scenario is this: they start playing. And I'm just going to throw out a name. Aaron Judge tests positive because they're going to test every week. Why are they testing every week? Because some of these people could get sick. Aaron Judge gets sick. Now, do the Yankees just stop playing for a week? Yeah, they're probably going to have to. So that's my biggest concern. They start playing from a safety aspect. You don't want anybody to get hurt or get sick. But if they actually start playing and a person from a team gets sick, I mean, we're seeing a Ford plant opened up in the last 2 weeks. The Ford plant opened up, and then a couple people tested positive. They had to shut everything down. How do you do this with baseball when you are not going to have people living in a bubble? Mike Trout made a really good story. He goes, "Listen, my wife's going to have our first kid this year. I'm going to go and be with that kid." So is he going to have to come back and do a 14-day quarantine before he comes back? There's so many questions beyond the finances that I think makes my head explode. And I think those are some of the biggest questions. People think greed, and I think there are so many more implications to playing ball with this pandemic hanging over everybody.
Very true. I can't say I disagree with you. As we move on to the fourth inning, now let's say that they are able to figure it out, Chad, and they are able to have this season. The 82 game season would certainly be an interesting scenario. I actually would kind of be into this.
Yeah.
Now, with the Cubs having a rotation of five guys who are basically all in their 30s at this point, maybe a team that, has been a little lagged over the years from all the games that they played and the postseason appearances, would a shortened season ultimately help the Cubs and maybe work to their advantage in the 2020 season should they play? I personally think
It's
it actually could, because you're not putting as much of a strain on the position players. Now, I think the biggest question, and I probably am sure this is where you're going to go too, is what effect will a shortened season have on the pitching rotation or the bullpen
Yeah.
for that matter? That is going to be the question that I don't think anybody can answer right now, until we actually see what happens.
It's funny, if you did an 82 game season last year, the Cubs make the playoffs and the Nationals, who you might remember won the World Series, don't even make the
Right.
playoffs. So that's a big implication right there. When I look at this, and I appreciate your take on this, when I look at it, I think about, well, this is technically our last full year at full salary with John Lester. Right. Well, with him at his age, could he come out there and fire more pistols? Because, the Cubs have that, I think, $25 million option for 2021, and then or a $10 million buyout. So if he comes out and blows the doors off of it, he's playing for a contract. Jose Quintana, this is his free agent year. He wants a big contract. Tyler Chatwood, we had big hopes going into spring training that he had figured it out. These are all free agents could really benefit by pitching, especially by a shortened season. So you hope maybe they can bring it. I just looked the last couple of years. I saw the report. I don't remember the exact number, but like in the last, since 15, yeah, the Cubs would have never missed the playoffs, and teams that, went really far in the playoffs would have missed the playoffs because the Cubs, kind of faltered there towards the end and ran out of gas. So I think it could benefit, but it's going to benefit the teams that, it's going to benefit the teams, I think, that are older, the teams with the pitchers that that have less in the tank. And I think the Cubs really are that mold.
So let's move on to the fifth inning now. And as we talk about the potential for a 2020 season to happen or not, if it even did, Chad, and we were able to play that 82 game season, is this one of those seasons that you have to just basically put an asterisk next to whoever comes out to win the World Series. You know, we've seen shortened seasons in certain sports. Baseball, the last time we had that was 1995 when they had the lockout. They had a shortened season of about 44 games. So it wasn't terribly much shorter than a normal season. But at the same time, you had the 81 strike where you had two halves to the season. Would you look at the year and just say, well, that one would just have an asterisk next to it? How do you ultimately look at the 2020 season, should it be played?
I don't think that there's a Dodger fan alive. And you know what, guys? Call into me if I've got this wrong. I'm going off the top of my head. But I don't think there's a Dodger fan alive who in 1981, right, that shortened season, I don't think there's a Dodger fan alive that's like, oh, no, that one doesn't count as much. Or there's really any fans that look at that pennant for that and think it's shortened. That really the asterisk season, the one that was, you know, was the black mark on this sport was 94-95, which – we're going to talk more next week about Maguire and Sosa because they've got the 30 for 30 coming out since we're talking about the Last Dance later. You know, that really helped save the downward spiral that baseball had gone into by just not having a World Series in that year. No, I don't think if this season gets played and they go through the postseason, I do not see how anybody would look at this and be like, and think anything more than we overcame, we conquered, and we were able to get baseball out there, and it really helped people through this really trying time. The challenge that I see, Ryan, I mentioned in the previous previous inning, what if one team, because of illness, they're no longer playing, and then it's no longer a 30 team league. I mean, that's an implication. What if then if you have less teams playing or if cities get shut down because of issues, you know, that's where this thing is just so goofy. But no, I think if this season gets played, even if it's 82 and they allow more people into the playoffs, I think it's going to be such a welcome addition to the worst year on record. That I don't think anybody will look down on this. It's going to stand out because you know if somebody bats 400, that'll be weird, right? Because you can do it in less
time.
Well,
that's where I think
that's the challenge. Right. That's
where I think
But those are limited. You know, those the high average ones are limited, like the highest winning percentage or highest batting average. But nobody's going to break the doubles or RBIs record. It's going to be like are they going after Ted Williams in 400?
Yep. All right. Very good. So let us move on to the sixth inning now, Chad. And switch gears a little bit as we talk a little bit more.
It's still baseball
a little bit. Obviously, the big story, I guess, in Chicago or I guess in sports, since we haven't had any, is people were watching The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary that detailed the Bulls' final run in 97-98 as they won their sixth and final title. And then it kind of, you know, shuffled back and forth to follow the career of Michael Jordan. I absolutely enjoyed it immensely. But of course, there was a, episode that focused on when Michael retired after the first three championships and then decided to play baseball in the White Sox organization for the Birmingham Barons. So my question to you, Chad, and then I can chime in on this, is that how much did you enjoy as much as you could with Jordan deciding to play baseball and memories you have of that comparatively to trying to block out that time in your life because you were just more upset that he didn't play for the Bulls anymore?
So two quick stories. One, what a ride. And I know I guarantee I speak for you and probably others. I wish we were just in week seven, whatever. I wish they just did one episode a week and this ran for 10 weeks, right? Like, why do they do two a week? Because I could have watched The Last Dance for 52 weeks. So I'm bummed that they did that. They didn't realize how good they had it. My memory of Jordan playing, there's two pieces. One is you know, it did feel like, you know, a thing. It just felt like, you know, almost like Tebow playing baseball. I never gave him the credit. So to hear the coaches and the scouts and those to talk about his growth and his progress and things, that was pretty eye-opening, pretty amazing. I remember the back when Interleague wasn't a thing. I remember him playing at Wrigley Field during the Crosstown Classic or whatever they called it back then. That was pretty fun. But let me tell you this one story. The first time I got to anchor NBC, an NBC local sports affiliate at WPSD in Paducah, Kentucky. I don't know if you know this story, Ryan. I was still in college. I was working. I worked from an internship into, you know, doing, being a news reporter, general assignment reporter. And the weekend guy was had a honeymoon, I think, and the main sports guy, Dave Winder, love Dave Winder. He had to have an upper and lower GI, and they looked at me and they're like, "Gordon, we want you to do two nights of a sports cast." That was my debut behind the anchor desk on a network, you know, affiliate. And the reason I bring that up, it was during the NBA Finals. And it was, you know, it was the flipping Houston Rockets. So I could have, the only, my only regret, how cool would it have been if Jordan was playing and led him there? But that's, I remember that night. I remember that every time I hear anybody having a gastro bypass or gastro issues, I think about how I got my break. But then it would have been fun, instead of watching Hakeem, it would have been having Jordan back in 95.
Yeah.
So that's my dumb story.
So I remember this vividly. I do remember the night that it was getting around with that he was going to retire from the NBA, because it was my freshman year at Southern Illinois University. You were a sophomore then. And I remember being in my dorm room and people were starting to say that Jordan was going to retire. And then the reports came out during the game as I was watching the White Sox and the Blue Jays in that game one, where Jordan threw out the first pitch. And it was almost like a surreal moment. And then you see him playing baseball. And, you know, on one hand, it's like you're happy for him to that degree. But of course, you know, when you're younger and you're selfish and you just wanted to see him continue to play for the Bulls, obviously I couldn't appreciate what he had done from that standpoint. But if you, now that I look back on it, and now that I've seen the documentary, and we're going to get into this with Kirk Bloom in our next inning, you totally appreciate how Michael Jordan went to another sport, went to a small town like Birmingham, Alabama, where football is absolutely king, and made baseball important for that summer for people in small towns all over the South, that nobody had gotten the opportunity to see Michael Jordan play in that capacity because they didn't have the NBA teams in these kind of markets. Yeah. That was their chance to see the greatest basketball player of all time, be it in another sport. But to be able to appreciate that and see that, I only wish that I could have had the opportunity to have said, hey, I got to see Michael Jordan play, but I got to see him play baseball. And even though he might not have been, you know, the most amazing baseball player, it still, I think, would have been such an amazing experience to see that and be a part of that. So for me, I can look back on it now and appreciate it that much more. Time now for the seventh inning stretch here on the Friendly Confines. And, you know, with the Last Dance documentary just out and now available to watch online, if you weren't able to catch it on ESPN, we have a treat for you this week. We have the longtime radio broadcaster for the Birmingham Barons. He covered Michael Jordan that fateful year of 1994. Longtime broadcaster for this team, Kurt Bloom, kind enough to join us here on the seventh inning stretch. Kurt, welcome to the Friendly Confines with Chad and Ryan. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us here for the show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. When you said a treat, I was thinking of Halloween. I'm maybe more of a trick than a treat, but we'll find out over the next 15 minutes.
You can find Kurt on Twitter at KurtBloom4. Of course, he's a great follow there. So, Kurt, let's just ask the obvious question before we get into some Last Dance Michael Jordan talk. You're a baseball broadcaster. Obviously, that is not happening right now. What have you been doing to kind of pass the time? I'm sure your wife is probably ready to strangle you, but what have you been trying to do to pass the time?
I'm going to let you count the number of things, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm doing. Okay. Well, first of all, yes, she is the beyond strangulation. Number one, it has been an incredible 2 weeks of interviews because of the Last Dance. There was a day last Monday that I had 7 interviews. I was on in 2 countries and 3 continents or something along those lines. And that really did take up a lot of time. The second thing that I'm doing is catching up on really what has become one of my favorite TV shows, and that's Chicago PD. So I go back to season 1, episode 1, and I'm now through 3.5 years of Chicago PD. And then third, and I say this with a kind of a smile, and at the same time, it's reality. And that is, I am driving. There's a company here in the South called Shipt. And I know up in Chicagoland, they have Instacart. So as glamorous as it might not seem, that's what's right now paying some of the bills. You have to do something. You have to grind.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I'm doing. So it's a combination of Jordan interviews and podcasts and Zoom casts, Chicago PD reruns, and then going out to Shipt. I'll be doing that after this interview, and that's basically 6.5-7 days a week. And I think ultimately, for me, the way I look at it, mentally and physically, I'm in a great place. I decided in March when sports got shut down that this is going to last a while. So I grabbed this job. I was lucky and fortunate, and I just keep going. I'm an optimistic person by nature, so I just keep going until someone tells me to stop.
Good for you. No, that's a great attitude to have, especially obviously with everything going on. And of course, when you have a sudden stop to sports like we have, it certainly, I can imagine, takes something away from you in that regard. Let me ask you this. You know, you said that you've been doing so many interviews and so many podcasts, and, you know, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this podcast with us. Did you have to maybe kind of think back a little bit? Did you have to say, oh my gosh, I gotta like really remember this stuff from, you know, over 20 years ago to when Michael was there? Did you kind of have to like really think back, maybe look at old notes or interviews to just kind of say to yourself, okay, I need to just be prepared so I can remember all this? Or was it pretty easy? You're like, no, I know exactly how it went down.
Well, I'm the type of guy that can't remember to put the garbage out on Wednesday night for Thursday pickup. And when my wife says, you know, swing by the grocery store and pick up a couple of tomatoes and cucumbers, I'll forget all that. I mean, I walk in, I'm like, oh no, I was supposed to do this. But when it comes to baseball and sports in 1994, it's there. It's all in a file from my shoulders to the top of my head. And it was a great question. And it's just all automatic recall. And it's not just me. I've found out. Teammates, front office, Terry Francona, whoever it is, our recall of that year, because maybe it was such a special year, is just incredible. I've told myself I better put some of this down in writing, or at least record it, but I haven't. But I could see every day, every minute, and practically remember 99.8% of the stories and things that I saw for 150 days.
So let's start here. I obviously grew up in Chicago. I was in high school and in college during that, you know, six title run. For me, it was very nostalgic to see everything that unfolded from the basketball side. I imagine for you, how nostalgic was it for you to watch the episode where they went deep into Michael Jordan's baseball career? It must have been very surreal for you to some degree to watch that episode and kind of reminisce.
Well, we've been watching it and reminiscing for 26 years, so it's no shock to the system. Especially things heighten up on anniversaries, the 5th, the 10th, the 25th. And this is because of The Last Dance, the 26th, which is not, you know, a regular scribed anniversary. Like, you don't give your family a gift on the 26th, but this was our gift, I guess. And the way we sum it up is all of us got to see in a period of 150 days what the rest of the world is now getting to see. So we opened this oyster up, the Last Dance did, and the people at ESPN, they opened it up, something we were able to see the contents of 26 years ago.
When you initially heard, we're talking with Kurt Bloom, longtime radio announcer for the Birmingham Barons, kind enough to join us here on the Seventh Inning Stretch, covered Michael Jordan as we reminisce about the Last Dance documentary. So when you heard Michael was coming to play for the Barons, do you remember where you were and what your reaction was?
I remember my reaction, and I'm not sure, again, if you've got sensors, bleepers, or...
You can say whatever you need.
You know, I mean, we're not on terrestrial radio, so the first word I said was bullshit, because I never thought it would happen. I'm an extreme optimist. I believe in life and love and health and happiness. But this was the most pessimistic day of my life, going, this is not going to happen. This guy's not going to get off a plane and wind up in Birmingham. And technically 25 miles south in this tiny suburb at the time called Hoover, Alabama. I said, this is not going to work. And then even after he did, there were days, for the first week, 2 weeks, that I said, someone's going to pull the plug on this and it's all going to be a joke and a mirage. And it didn't really happen. But like everything else, Michael Jordan proved not only me, but the rest of the world wrong. And I think it's important to tell everybody that we didn't find out as a staff until March 30th, and we opened up less than a week later. So there wasn't time to prepare. And when I look back on it and I talk to some other front office people, I think that might have been actually best because we had great leadership, but it might have been something that could have been overwhelming. And because we didn't know what was going to happen, we just went about our daily business until that call in March. And then we answered the phones as quickly as we possibly can and marched on with our business.
So the first time you got to meet Michael Jordan with the Barons, what was that interaction like for you?
My very first one, technically, is kind of funny. For a long time, I, as a radio guy, I'm also in charge of batting practice music. And I take a lot of pride in that, keeping the groove, so to speak, for the guys, you know, and they look up because the reason why is because you're preparing for your game. You got your notes and they're on the field. So they always look up at you and they yell, put the music on, put you. And he had other conferences and the main press conference he had was probably like 4 or 5 days in. Well, anyways, we were struggling with at the time, 1994, I was struggling with the audio at the ballpark. The speakers would go out. You'd hear 5 seconds of a song. You were just getting so thoroughly embarrassed and thrashed. And you knew that it's part of sports, you know, the music leading up to the event. And when he did his press conference, he came up to the our banquet room. And it was that day that I finally had music that didn't stop, that continued on. And the very first thing he ever said to me is, did a good job today with that. And I'm like, oh, wow, I made it, you know. and for those fans and those people that remember, I do, like it was yesterday, there was a trio called Sisters with Voices, SWV. And they had the 90s vibe going. And that's the trigger right there. So if you ever want to go back and Google them and see what they're all about, that's the one where the music played and there was no interruption. And Michael finally gave me, you know, hey, man, you're in. You're okay. You were pretty garbage prior to this because you couldn't get us going. But you're all right now. So that's the way I looked at it. It's a fun, you know, first time memory, no doubt.
Rhino, I love that interview. I love the fact that we're watching The Last Dance. And you text me, you're like, I'm gonna reach out to the Barons. We're gonna get this interview. So kudos on you, man. That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it really was. And a couple of things there. One, Kurt had told us off the interview before we started that basically he had just been doing constant radio interviews and podcasts for the last few weeks talking about this.
So it was an original idea.
Yeah. So I do appreciate that he made time for us because he definitely was very busy, he said, doing a lot of reminiscing about it. The other thing, Chad, that, you know, we gleaned from that interview that we're going to get into in part two is we're going to talk more about Michael Jordan's chances of playing in the major leagues. And that's for next week when we hear part two of our interview.
Are we going to stretch this out to 10 episodes? Like the Friendly Confines, The Last Dance,
that's 10, right.
10 episodes.
I figure if they can go 10, we can go 2, right?
We can go 2. At least do that. We can go 2. Real quickly, I'm going to put you on the spot. Those 10 episodes, the thing that like, I remember watching that and being like, oh God, I remember that. Remember that. Remember that. What were the ones that were like, as they happened, you're like, oh my God, I don't remember how, like, I remember Rodman was a bit of a distraction, but like the fact that, like, I forgot about Madonna and Carmen Electra. I forgot about him going to Vegas during the middle of the season and go to the club. That just blew my mind. What was the one when you saw it, you were like, and it could be about any of the players, but what, and by the way, Horace Grant calling, you know, the Pistons, you know, bitches. That was kind of good too. What was your moment of that?
Yeah,
that
there were a few things. It is funny because there were things that I sat there and I went, wow, I totally forgot that happened. I forgot that Pippen had surgery that final year and got out the first 44 games. And I also forgot that he demanded a trade. Now, I remember Pippen demanding a trade during the 94-95 season, like right before Michael came back. But I didn't remember him then getting upset about the fact that he was still, you know, not willing to play for the team. So that was a takeaway. The Rodman thing, too. Now, here's the interesting thing about the Rodman story. Rodman goes to Vegas. But if you look at his stats from that year, Chad, Rodman played in 80 games that year. He played in 80 of the 82 games. So it's not like he missed a considerable amount of time that season. So I do find that interesting that, you know, that was in there. I understand it was
good TV. It was good TV. Let's just say that.
But I didn't want people to think like Rodman didn't show up for like 20 games. I mean, He missed, I think, two games that entire season, and he was there the rest of the time. But
such fun. We're gonna have that. We're gonna have the rest. Why don't you share how, if people want to follow him?
Yeah. So Kurt is available. You can follow him on Twitter at KurtBloom4. So be sure to check him out. And of course, he's just waiting to get back to doing his thing and being the announcer for the Birmingham Barons, which he has done so for 31 seasons. Pretty remarkable what a career he's had, you know, calling games for Birmingham and the Barons, and obviously the highlight of that 1994 season. So we appreciate his time.
So good, Ryan. So good. So way to go get that. And I'll share with you, if you want to follow Ryan, he's at Ryan D. Lieber on Twitter, and you can find me at Cubs Confines on Twitter. And as always, if you haven't already, you know, join our list of, I think, 1,500 people strong on the Friendly Confines Cubs Facebook page. You can find that by just searching for the Friendly Confines Cubs Facebook page on Facebook, obviously. A lot of great messaging. It's a lot more fun during game days and things like that, but it's a great fun, positive Cubs experience. So much fun. Again, kudos, Ryan, for knocking that out. So, hey, we're gonna shift gears here in the eighth inning, and we're going to talk about a longtime friend of the show, a longtime friend of mine, and a pioneer but a legend of Chicago radio, Mark Silverman. You know, it's kind of a fun thing that's happening with the folks over at Obvious Shirts. But if you don't know, and you probably do know, Mark Silverman, who's been a guest on the show a handful of times, he's a legend in Chicago sports talk radio. He's been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma just in April. And it was quite a shock to him. And he's immediately gone into treatment. But if you're familiar with the Jimmy V, the V Foundation, the Sylvie and Obvious Shirts are coming together they've got these fun shirts. One of them says Sylvie Strong. And then the other one, his son actually drew a picture. And it's this great like crayon or the thing where it says Sylvie is strong. Mason drew that. So I wanted to throw this challenge out to any of our listeners, and this is a multi-step challenge, but I promise you, we're going to do this. So if you happen to buy one of these shirts, all you have to do is go obviousshirts.com, obviousshirts.com, click on the link, and it'll take you right to the Sylvie Strong page. If you buy one of those shirts, take a picture in that shirt, and tag Ryan and I in the show and tag Mark, we will be purchasing a shirt in your honor, and we'll be giving it out to listeners. So our hope is that several people will actually take this picture and tag us, but we want to raise as much. Every single penny from this fundraiser goes to the Jimmy V Foundation. So it's such a great one. And Rhino, when you think about Silverman and what he means to Chicago radio, and he ain't going anywhere, he's going to get through this. You know, what's your thoughts about Mark?
I mean, Mark has handled this with such class, such grace, and he's really been amazing to put himself out there, share his story,
and kind of, you know, be one of those people who is a role model for others who are dealing with this. And, you know, cancer touches so many people, and it doesn't have, you know, an age group or, you know, anybody of race or color or religion. It affects anyone and everyone. I just give Mark so much credit. As someone who has known Mark since he was about, you know, 19, 20 years old, and has seen how hard he has worked to get to where he is, I have no doubt he's going to put the same effort into this fight against cancer that he has for everything else in his life. And I just certainly wish him the very best and wish him a speedy recovery.
I remember doing radio with him at Southern Illinois University. And he just, you know, he told me what his plan was. And his plan was to do exactly what he's doing, which is be the you know, one of the top radio guys in the city of Chicago, cover Jordan, cover the Bears, cover the Bulls, cover the Cubs. And so he's out there doing it. And when he says, you know, we got this, you know, he's going to do this. And so again, go to obviousshirts.com and you'll see Sylvie Strong is one of the links. Buy that shirt, support Sylvie, support the V Foundation. It's such a great cause. It's a great shirt. And let's be honest, we all need something to support and cheer that is outside of this COVID garbage.
Couldn't have said it any better, Chad. So let us move on to the ninth inning. We'll finish up with something fun. Recently, the Marquee Network has kind of pulled Len Casper, Cole Wright, some others that, you know, work at the network to put together an all-time Cubs lineup. I have not done this. I should have been a little more prepared, Chad, but I figured it would be more fun to maybe do it off the cuff. So with that being said, give me your starting nine plus a relief pitcher. And we can go around the horn. It doesn't have to be like a who would lead off, who would bat second kind of thing. Go by position. And if you want me to start, I'm happy to as well. But if you want to go first, feel free. But go around the horn and give me your starting, let's say eight with the starting pitcher and then your relief pitcher.
Let's do it this way. I'll put you on the spot. You give me your starting catcher and your starting three outfielders, and then I'll follow up, and then I'll give you my starting infield and you can follow up. That way we're a little bit on the spot. So who's your left to right outfield plus catcher?
Okay. So left to right outfield. So here's where it gets tricky. And I don't mean to try and distract from this, but can it be like anybody in the outfield? Like if somebody plays normally right field, can I put them in left field, or does it have to be somebody that, like,
you know what, you know what, you, because there's no baseball, you know, whatever the heck you want to do.
Okay.
You can do that. Right. Yeah.
So my Cubs outfield, just thinking off the top of my head, Hack Wilson is going to be playing left field for me. In right field, I'm going to put Andre Dawson in right field. And in center field, I am going to put, oh boy, who should I put in center field right now? I'm going to go with just because he's coming into my head, I'm going to go with Kai Kyler at center field.
I sincerely appreciate that. And before you go to the catcher, I'm going to tell you you're wrong, because you're going to be embarrassed, but
I know I did this last time and I had an outfielder. Yeah, I totally forgot.
Our left fielder is Billy Williams. You can't not have Billy Williams. I'm sorry. And I'd put Hack Wilson, the RBI leader, probably never be beaten in center field. And then I'm going to disagree with you, but it's okay. I'm okay with you with Andre. You know where my allegiance lies. One of the most exciting players of my lifetime, Sammy Sosa, is going to start in right field. Who do you got to catch?
Okay. So let me back up for a second. Can I put Billy Williams in center field then? I'll put Billy Williams in center, Hack Wilson in right or in left, and Andre
if you want to be more accurate, I'd swap them. I put Billy in left and Hack in.
Okay, just, there we go. Hack's going to be in center. Billy's in left. You're right. That's a great call. All right, so catcher, I'm going to go with. See, now this is where it's interesting. There's a part of me that actually wants to pick David Ross, because I feel like, how can you not pick D. Ross?
But I'm gonna go Gabby Hartnett at catcher. I guess I'm just gonna have to do that. Gabby Hartnett put up some amazing numbers. I'm gonna have to put him at catcher.
Gabby's my starter at catcher as well. I love that you picked the third string catcher for the 2016. I love it because he's epic. And I love as well that three catchers had huge moments
in
game seven, which is hilarious. All right, so I'll do the infield now.
Okay.
I'm going to have, Rhino, you know, the player of our youth. I'd be surprised if you don't have him at second base as well. I've got, Ernie at shortstop. And then this is where, you know, you get either historical or you get more favoritism. You got to go Ron Santo. You got to go Hall of Famer at third base. I do, at least. And then for first base is where you could go more recent because you just love them. I'm going to take a flyer right now and I'm going to do something. I mean, it'd be so easy to say Cap Anson, right? And so many people loved Derek Lee back in the day. But I'm going to say Anthony Rizzo because I do believe the way he's been playing, the way he's been carrying himself, I believe like that's Mr. Cub 2.0 of this generation. So I'm going to just put a flyer on Rizzo and say he's going to stand out test of time, and I'm going to put him on at first base.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to kind of go in a different direction. Yes, Cap Anson could be a guy. Mark Grace could be a guy. Derek Lee could be a guy. I mean, Derek Lee, my God. I mean, you could take Derek Lee for those three or four seasons that he had. I mean, they were better, especially 2005. That could have been one of the greatest seasons the Chicago Cub has ever had, you know, if you look at his numbers.
Could have. Pound for pound.
Yeah. Yep. I'm going to go Phil Cavaretta at first base. Maybe get some flack for that, but
no.
I'm going to go Phil Cavaretta. Second base, I'm going to obviously go Sandberg. Even though Rogers Hornsby is a close second, but I'm going to go Sandberg at second. Shortstop, obviously Ernie Banks. Third base, yes, Santo, 100% you could put him there, but I'm going to say Chris Bryant. I'm going to put Chris Bryant at third base. And then I guess that leaves us with starting pitcher and then relief pitcher. So would you like to do the honors or would you like me to go there?
You know, let's throw out three pitchers and one reliever. I think that'd be a fun one. You know, we could do the test of time. So Fergie Jenkins is going to be the guy, for me in terms of a Hall of Fame pitcher of our past. And then I look at what that shortened time that he was the greatest pitcher of all time. I just look at Jake and say, Jake Arrieta. I mean, how could I think about the two no hitters in the span of just a couple dozen starts, you know, literally like willed us during the postseason in 15 and 16. He was just the guy. So I'll stop with those two and then I'll finish up with the starting pitcher and a closer. But what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, those are both great choices. So I'm going to also go Fergie. And then the second guy I'm going to go with is Mordecai Three Finger Brown.
Yeah.
You're obviously going way back on that.
Not a lot of film on him. He doesn't show up a lot in the best of videos. You know, you just can't, you don't see his dominance.
Yeah, very true. So those are the two. And then three, I mean, certainly there's other directions you can go in, but I'm going to go with Greg Maddux as my number three guy. I understand that he had to this day, it still bothers me that the Cubs let him get away. And that's a whole other story and a whole other episode. But, when he was there from 88 to 92, Maddux proved that he was just scratching the surface of what an incredible career he was going to have. And he did win the Cy Young with the Cubs. Prior to Jake winning it, he was the last guy to win the Cy Young Award before Rick Sutcliffe had in 84. So I'm going to go with Maddux as my three guys, as much as it pains me because I do love Rick Sutcliffe.
I Sut would probably be – because, again, it's – I appreciate you on Mordecai. That's more, you know, historically accurate. But Sut is just that time. You know, the 89 team was your team that really brought you into this world. The 84 team was the one that made me know what caring and crying and emotion feels like, right? And then I would, I push back on Maddux and I do this and I'm so okay with you not liking it or some of our listeners liking it. Greg Maddux is a Hall of Famer for the Atlanta Braves. And he is the biggest testament to the failures of the Tribune as an ownership group. That's
true.
It pains me to say that. So I really do believe there should be only 131 hanging from Wrigley and it should be not Greg Maddux. It should be Fergie.
Who do you like as your closer? Is it an obvious choice?
It's interesting. I mean, you could go with if you want to just have some fun with it and just be like Rod Beck, or Carlos Marmol, because I mean they were at the time were so incredibly strong and incredibly dominant. But you know, my favorite closer is here at the end. You know, it's towards the end of his career because he had such a. I love that he got to finish as a closer, and I just put him in there as a love affair. But I just love Kerry Wood, and even though he wasn't dominant, he has a couple decent, opportunities where he shined as a closer. That was what might have been sort of thing. But yeah, probably Suter probably would be the guy you'd put on there historically. But man, I love Kerry Wood. I'd love him in there. I'd love him as a closer from the start. I think nobody could have touched him for a decade.
Yeah. So, I mean, I totally respect that answer. I can't argue with that. I think there's no wrong answer here, right? Suter would be a guy that I would go with. Obviously, I have such a love and affinity for Mitch Williams. But for me, if I'm going to go with a closer, Lee Smith is going to be the guy who I go with for the Chicago Cubs. You know, for he was the dominant closer in baseball for such a long time.
Such a close number two, really is a close number two for me. I'm with you.
Yeah, very true. I mean, this is fun, man. And like I said, there is no wrong answer, right? Because there's so many guys that you can debate back and forth. And then you have the question of, like you said before, do you go with like a single season guy and say, I want, you know, Jake Arrieta from 2015. Like,
yeah.
That's the guy, because if that's the case, then you can't.
I mean, if the scenario was give me a player in a season. I mean, I think we're picking a much different top nine, right? If we could pick like one moment in time or one season in time, I think we look at it differently, but these are just fun things. So, hey, if you guys want to, you know, send us, tweet us, tweet at us, your starting nine, make sure you tag both of us, and we'd love to carry the conversation online.
100%. Well, that is going to wrap things up for this edition of the Friendly Confines. Chad, it was good to be back. It was good to be back. Get back into the saddle. I know we took some time away just to, you know, see if baseball would maybe come back, but we finally said, you know what, it's time for us to just come back.
We're going to be back next week. So our longtime listeners, I mean, we're getting ready to cross over into 20,000 downloads. Thank you all so much. We're going to be back next week. And until they say, hey, baseball's done for a while, we're going to be in your ear, and we're going to keep bringing you amazing guests. So thanks for listening, everybody, and hang in there.
Absolutely. So for Chad, I'm Ryan. We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Have a good one and stay safe.
Take care, everybody.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley.